Welcome to the Covert Swarm podcast. Stories, news, and opinions from the world of offensive cybersecurity delivered straight to your ears every month.
Hello, and welcome to Covert Swarm's podcast. This is episode number 8, and today we have another special guest, Tony Dixon, who's one of Covert Swarm's Hive members and has been with us for a few months now. And we're going to be talking to Tony about his insights into the industry and specifically why he believes that our industry needs to change. So Tony, welcome, and go ahead and introduce yourself if you would, please.
Thanks, Luke. Yeah, my name's Tony. I've been working with technology for around about 15 years. It sounds like a long time, but it certainly hasn't felt that. I started off with a major telecoms provider at the very start of my career, you know, working in IT. And then after a few years, I moved into the public sector. And after staying with the public sector for a number of years, I then moved across to an internet service provider to work as a network engineer. By that point in my career, I was very familiar with infrastructure and I'd had my sort of fair share of installations, even design work. And then I decided to steer my career towards security. And that's exactly where I've been for around about the last 4 years now.
Wow, that's quite an extensive career, Tony. So tell us, what got you into the sort of cybersecurity or penetration testing world first off? Like, what was the bug or the interest that you were curious about that you then followed into what's now your passion?
I think it was when I worked as a network engineer, we dealt with everything. We were essentially designing and building networks, implementing them, supporting them. And we would see a lot of attacks, brute force attempts on the edge networks and various things in the logs. And from there, my curiosity just grew. And as I was kind of heading down a Cisco path anyway, Cisco released a cohort for CyberOps certification. So I thought I'd have a look at that. And that kind of sat on the barrier between what's secure in terms of your firewall configuration with a slight glimpse into cybersecurity in general. And from there, it kind of piqued my interest. So I then looked to move to a security company, so I could dig a little deeper into this and find out what it was all about. But to me back then, cybersecurity was quite broad. I didn't realize that there was so many defined roles between risk and penetration testing and defensive blue team operations. So it all meant one thing. But growing with the industry, I've stayed on the offensive side, and that's exactly where my passion is at the moment.
Well, thanks, Tony. So you're part of our red team today here at Covert Swarm. And what would you say to those listening that are keen to get into whether it be penetration testing or red teaming like you are now? Like, where should they start in the industry?
I think we're quite fortunate nowadays. If I'd asked that same question back when I started, and bearing in mind we're only talking about 4 years ago here, then it was a bit more difficult to get that practical knowledge, because you want to practice, but you want to practice in a safe, legal manner. That's the main goal here. There wasn't a great deal of resources around back then, but now we're quite fortunate that we have many CTF platforms. There's a lot more documentation, certifications. There's so many things you can follow, both from a practical perspective and a theoretical perspective. I mean, it's like anything, really. You've got to practice it physically to get better. You know, it's like driving a car or doing anything else. You physically have to be doing it to sort of gain that better understanding. But we've got so much available these days, from TryHackMe to Hack the Box. It seems to be what a lot of the younger generation are using to get their foothold in the industry. And I think that's great, because you'll find that there's, you know, the younger generation are coming up with these unique skill sets. They're already getting up to scratch.
Oh, thank you, Tony. So you've been with Covert Swarm now for a few months, and how have you found it in terms of our approach versus previous experience as both a, you know, penetration tester and a red teamer?
Coming from a traditional testing background, I initially found it quite an adjustment. I wouldn't say it was difficult. It was just more trying to understand how we do things. But now that I understand it, I am very much an advocate for this model that we exercise. I think it's different to anything that's being done in the industry at the moment. I think it's something that more companies might adopt to in the future, because, you know, I think it's well said that a sort of point in time pen test is only as good as the day that it's done. So I think the way we do it is continuous model. So we could be testing a client daily or the minimum once a week. So I think what we do and how we do it benefits the client, it benefits us, it gives us time to understand their application. It gives us time to understand their architecture as well. I think a benefit is it brings us closer to our clients because we have this constant communication. They believe in it, we believe in it, and it's sort of beneficial all around.
No, thank you, Tony. That's great insight. So you released a recent blog for us, which I'm sure we'll link in the description or you can find on our website. So that was very much around, you know, and I quote the title here, you know, one Hive member's insights into how and why our industry should change. So just on the second part of that, like, why should the industry change? Like, what needs to happen in the industry in the sense of the way the industry thinks about offensive security in general, in your thoughts?
Well, that's a good question, Luke. I think every company is going to have similar pressures. There's always going to be timeframes that need to be adhered to. And there's always going to be a problem with budget. Not necessarily a problem with budget, but that's going to be one of the constraints. And the way I look at it is we can't fit everything into a 3-day exercise. And a lot of the times when testing is scoped, it's all about how much time can we do this in. And that doesn't seem to be an issue with the way we do that now, because we have this continuous approach. We have that ability to spread things out over time, and it affords us that time to dig deeper. It affords us that time to fully understand the architecture or the applications and understand its functionality, you know, read into all the binaries. Everything that you need to be able to do to fully understand that application or that infrastructure, we now have that flexibility for. And the value that that gives the client is, you know, they get something that's thorough, they get something that's accurate, and they get something that's ongoing. It also gives us the chance to understand more about what they do as a business, not just the actual context of the application that we might be testing. It gives us more of an opportunity to learn about them, so we can then start predicting these attack plans based on trends in the industry or based on what we have found previously in the exercises.
Well, thank you, Tony. I think it's fair to say that we think the whole industry in terms of offensive security should follow a similar approach. Tell us a bit more, just from a practical perspective, how that translates into your delivery. So perhaps an example from maybe a recent story or a recent approach where in practice an organization has adopted more of the sort of continuous or constant cyber attack approach, and what that actually led to in terms of output and value to them.
You know, as you know, look, I do a lot of mobile work. For anybody that doesn't know, that's the context of what you can see from a third-party application. Let's say, for example, it was a malicious application. What impact could that have on our client's application? So we look at that from a kind of third-party perspective, if you like. And recently, in fact, I say recently, I think it was actually in my first week with COVID Storm, I was able to read all of the binaries, all of the contents of the IPA. This was specifically on iOS. And doing that gave me the chance to find hard-coded secrets that were in there. And you wouldn't necessarily find these off just searching for these strings, because they might not necessarily have that generic name that you're looking for. They might be encrypted, or they might just be kind of buried deep within the binary. And I was able to find active developer credentials for the application, which would allow anybody to log straight into the developer's portal. I also found, you know, things like Amazon Web Services credentials, you know, not quite the full picture. It was missing sort of one or two key artifacts, but, you know, just discovering things like that, you don't necessarily have the time to do that always. You know, when you're pressed for time, you're searching for these strings, you know, just trying to tease this information out of the application. And I guess relying on the fact that these might have some form of generic naming convention, but when you've got the opportunity to go through the entirety of the application and read all of the functionality and really understand that, that's when you can put it into context and think, well, yeah, this is what the API key is used for. This is what these credentials are used for. And it can significantly increase the attack surface, because let's be honest, an attacker, one of the luxuries they have is time. So,
well, absolutely. You know, they're not bound by change window or number of days or, you know, limitations of scope or things that are, you know, are out of scope, right? They're targeting the whole organization, which, you know, very similar to how we think about things and emulating, simulating that sort of worst nightmare threat.
What could be more effective at helping secure your organization than employing your worst nightmare to try and break in first? That's exactly what the team here at Cohort Swarm provides. Through a simple monthly subscription, we continuously deliver tailored cyber, social, and physical security attacks to organizations just like yours. Every month, we'll work with your team to uncover security vulnerabilities across your ever-changing attack surface that will lead to you being breached. We'll then raise the alarm and guide the remediation steps required to close the gaps. before a genuine bad actor can exploit them. Constant security testing for your constantly changing attack surface.
So Tony, just coming back a sec there. So when you're thinking about delivery now in this new world and Covert Swarm's approach, what's really different about it when you're not limited by time? Let's take a comparison, for example, if you were limited by time, like how far would you typically be able to go? Is it because you're generating lots of noise potentially, or, you know, you're not focusing on what really matters? Talk us through that.
I think part of the benefit is you're not necessarily hard bound by a methodology. Yes, you do have a methodology, but I think the way we approach a test and the way we use a methodology is quite loose, because it will always be there, you know, for guidance, but we have the opportunity to kind of offshoot into different areas of the application. I think when you're tight for time, you're looking at that methodology and you're thinking they're there for a good reason. You're finding the most key parts, the most critical things. You're doing your due diligence and the methodology is there to highlight those areas. But what we have is the benefit to go around that methodology and go into different areas, so that way we're getting the full picture and not just, as I said, the highlights. And I think that approach can only be done on a continuous basis. I think that's the main problem. I think the main issue is we need this continuous approach, because things change on a daily basis. Architecture changes with applications, changes the application, and we need to adapt to change with that as well.
Just thinking about this kind of differently, from the value you feel from a Hive member perspective, like coming from a world where you're doing lots of different assessments, different customers, time limited, how do you find it? So we've talked a little bit about the sort of client value, and there's much more we could discuss there, but from a red team of value, like what you get out of what you're passionate about, which is also your job, right? Like, how do you find the approach?
For me, it just works. Having the time to spread a test out really gives us motivation to look at areas we possibly wouldn't normally look at. Not because it's going to lead us astray, but it kind of refers back to what I said earlier. It gives us the chance to look at different avenues, and that can often be where some of the key findings are. And I think from a testing perspective, essentially what we want to do is we want to deliver this to the client. We want them to have the best experience. And in doing that, we need to deliver. We need to find things that they can fix, essentially. And oftentimes it's not the case. You know, there's some very robust applications out there and networks, but there's always a value add from going that little bit further. And I guess that's what we have the ability to do. We don't just stop, you know, we take it that one step further. And as you pointed out, Luke, is we kind of bring that customer's worst nightmare to reality in a very controlled manner. And this is where the real value is, because if we can highlight that, then it's better us highlighting that than somebody with malicious intent.
One thing I'm aware of in the industry is, you know, when you're buying, let's just say it's a 5-day mobile app pen test, just as an example, what you're really buying is a day and a half for whoever it is that's delivering the test to learn about the app, right? And then you've probably got, what, a day to a day and a half for reporting. So there's 3 of the 5 days taken care of. So you're actually only getting sort of 2 days worth of testing. So where we bring in things like the Offensive Operations Center, but also critically the knowledge that we build up of the customer throughout our constant attack, are you finding you're actually getting more actual time to test? Therefore, the customer's getting more actual Tony from a skill set perspective when you're swarming in on a, you know, point of an attack path?
Absolutely. And I think part of that comes from, you know, the continuous model, because the chances are I've worked with this client very recently. So having that base understanding, I mean, I guess everyone's going to have to take that time at some point to learn something about the client, which will impact the test in a very minor way. But I think once you have that, it's not like you're going to wait another year or so to test the same client. You will then have that knowledge going forward of how they do business, essentially. So it does afford you more time to be testing. So it does minimize time. And obviously the Offensive Operations Center does mitigate a lot of that as well. And I think one of the other key things to point out is kind of our Hive structure, you know, and how close we are to our clients. It almost feels like everybody's involved in every engagement, because we have that open communication that doesn't just come directly to me. You know, for example, if I've got my head down working on a test and I could miss something, then there's always somebody else there looking as well. So I think not just the continuous testing, but the whole approach and how we connect with our clients is really why we stand out, in my opinion.
So for the audience and the listeners, with your experience in mobile and web as well, like what are the common things you're still finding today? Like if people listening could almost go away today and audit their sort of web and mobile app stack, what are the common things to look for that you're typically finding on projects? And I'm not just talking about the, you know, missing HTTP headers and TLS weaknesses, right? That's sort of wider noise, but putting you on the spot here very deliberately, there's some best practices or some common themes you're seeing when you're targeting our customers and what you're seeing in the wider community.
I think hard-coded credentials seems to be the one that pops up frequently, whether that's, you know, in a mobile application or a web application. And we're finding a lot of key bits of information that are stored within the application. And it's only a matter of time before somebody can find that. I remember a client asking me once, because obviously they provide us with the IPA files, and their perspective was, well, it's encrypted when it's on the App Store. So how is an attacker going to get to the same position that you're in? And obviously the answer to that is they would decrypt the application. You're talking about a matter of time, whether that's 10 minutes or an hour, depending on the experience of the adversary, but they will eventually find that information. So hard-coded credentials is definitely one of the key things that's still there. Maybe not the most critical, but the volume of how often that's seen within applications, whether it's web or mobile, it always seems to be on the horizon. Another thing can be around the authorization element, you know, having the ability to go outside of the boundaries of an account and its designated permissions to be able to view information of another account, an administrator, client. Authorization, as far as it being what I would class as a non-technical vulnerability, is something that packs quite a bit of impact. So those two are very much at the forefront of my mind without giving it too much thought, Luke.
Thank you, Tony. Just to add to your point, something I've been thinking about a lot recently is when you talk about credentials, it's not just your username and password, right? It's things like your API, secret keys, and all the rest of it you mentioned earlier around where you were, you know, diving deep into the binary with the time you had on this mobile test and managed to identify, you know, sensitive information around the customer's AWS stack and legacy sort of developer accounts that had been left in there, possibly for testing purposes, which led to, you know, wider breaches. And this is how organizations are compromised, right? And if they're targeted by whether it be a advanced persistent threat and or state-sponsored actor, or, you know, malicious hacking group of any kind, they're looking for that foothold, that credential, that point of access, and they will spend the time to tear the binary to bits and find those pieces of the puzzle to start to threads of an attack chain, right? It's, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, phishing being an initial attack vector, but not always. And I think typically as well, Tony, it's completely undetectable. If someone's tearing your, you know, your App Store binary to bits, you can't detect any of that, right? Not until the point that they try and attempt to log in or try and actually send you traffic to gain that foothold, you know, all of those elements of the attack chain are never going to be seen by your SOC, your alerting, or your SIEM, because they're all offline and done. There's nothing you could really do there unless you're in the realms of doing, you know, additional levels of obfuscation or additional alerting mechanisms for, you know, certain, you know, when certain requests come through. I found a great technique, or, you know, great technique I'm aware of, is build in canaries in your APIs. So, you know, have API calls, which, you know, are undocumented, but are actually in your binary somewhere, so that if an attacker does go that deep and then starts, you know, making calls to these APIs, that sends a canary up because someone's found it and someone's aware of it, and, you know, they're just dead ends, but there's a course of action there that it's a non-expected request that you're receiving and is outside of the normal bounds of functionality. Even more so in internal APIs, like internal intricacies you have that make up your application stack, you know, make sure that you have canaries at the right points so that certain requests that you see from locations or, you know, API requests that are outside of normal internal API calls are flagged, because that, you know, in its own right could be a sign of compromise or an attack of fuzzing for things, or have found something that you know, you wouldn't be expecting. So I don't know if you've got anything to add there at all, Tony.
Well, just as you describe that, Luke, it makes me think of the word tripwire. You know, it's essentially what it's like when you think about it physically. And I've used tokens in the past. You know, there's certain ways you can embed them in documentation and things like that. They've been around for quite a few years. But yeah, you've absolutely got a valid point there.
One thing to just add there as well, Tony, that as per our last podcast, which whoever's listening hasn't had a chance to listen to yet, episode 7, where we had a special guest, John Elliott, he's quite well known in the PCI community. We were talking a lot about anything you're doing client-side, specifically in JavaScript, if there is anything sensitive there. You know, maybe you're a banking website or have a gaming application, and there's stuff you're doing that you want to obfuscate and for people not to be able to read easily. but also, you know, as part of that, where you're attempting to deobfuscate the JavaScript, there's certain practices you can use to put in, you know, canaries and tripwires in that so that it makes sure you're very time consuming, if not nearby impossible, to get to a point where you can actually read that in a format that, you know, is deobfuscated to a level you can work with. So I know we use similar techniques in a lot of our attacks, but it's just something to think about, you know, what you're doing client side in the binaries and what you've got will actually think, how would I, if an attacker is really diving deep here, what could they find? What is in there? And to be clear, that's not in any way suggesting you should be storing things like secret keys and credentials locally ever. But it's just a thing to think about. If someone is tearing your app to bits, the application binary in iOS, for example, that there's triggers in there that would make you aware of, at least make it more challenging. Not that you're doing anything sensitive anyway, but it just adds a layer of mitigation for then things like mapping out requests and how the API that the app talks to is structured and put together. So things to think about.
Yeah, totally agree with that, Luke. And I think it goes back to the age-old saying of, you're never going to stop an attack. You essentially want to slow them down. And I guess putting tripwires as they are in place, you're trying to slow somebody down or even deter the low-level attackers. I mean, they're going to be blissfully unaware of that as they start looking into a binary. But if you've got that information, then you could head them off and harden your application or put security measures in place to further deter them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as we said earlier, no one's bound by, you know, attackers aren't bound by time. But like you would implement a SIEM solution or invest in a SOC, right, to monitor your network or active attacks. Just another way to think about defense in depth against your organization as a whole. So absolutely. So Tony, before we close this episode, any sort of closing thoughts or advice to either organizations looking to move into, you know, more of a continuous approach to cybersecurity, specifically offensive security, or also people looking to get into this world and the way we think versus, you know, traditional pen testers and red teamers?
I guess for organizations, if there's something and it's said a lot that keeps you awake at night, then have that conversation and design a plan around that. Because I think it's better to surface these concerns than bury them away and just try and put, you know, more and more infrastructure in place to prevent this from happening. I think it's important to highlight these. It's kind of like the way you would put a web application firewall in front of an application and hope that nobody finds your unsanitized input where you're finding cross-site scripting or, you know, SQL injection. I think it's better to find that and fix it and use that web application firewall as a defense in depth topology versus hope that it'll be enough to stop somebody from getting to that unsanitized code. So from a client perspective, you know, have that conversation, bring those concerns to reality. And, you know, I guess that matures the business. It matures anybody that's looking at that as well. As far as, you know, a message to anybody in the industry looking to get into this, then again, reach out, have a conversation, find out what you need to do. There's always a way in. You could find that organization that'll give you a break. There's definitely organizations out there that are looking at more than just what you're capable of doing from a technical perspective. And in my opinion, having that business acumen, being able to talk to clients, I think that's just as important, if not more important, than being able to turn over an RCE, you know?
Absolutely great advice. Well, thank you, Tony. So we'll bring this episode to a close. I just want to say a massive thank you to Tony. We have a number of exciting episodes coming up with various special guests from all over the industry, as well as some more stories from our swarm of ethical hackers. And thank you again, Tony, and goodbye.
Thanks, Luke.
While you're still here, we'd love to tell you more about Covert Swarm. Our unique Red Team subscription service emulates genuine unlimited scope cyber attacks using our own swarm of ethical hackers. Want to test your exposure to social engineering attacks? No problem. Want to understand what a ransomware attack could do to your business? We'll make that happen. Are you kept awake at night by security risks in your tech stack? We'll find them before they do. We'll even cover your regulatory pen test reporting requirements. Everything Covert Swarm delivers flows through our Offensive Operations Center platform, allowing you to plan and see where our attacks are taking place, gain rapid insights into where your next breach point exists, and enables you to direct our swarm of ethical hackers to explore specific areas of your estate on demand. We even communicate with your team in real time via Slack. So ditch the limited scopes, infrequent testing, and over-restrictive rules of engagement. And subscribe to Covert Swarm today. Learn more at covertswarm.com. See you on the next episode.